the inside. She got the scoop on the ones to watch, on the ones that's hot. No one can do it quite like Caroline. Caroline. No one can do it quite like Caroline. It's time for Caroline.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Hyper Caroline Hobby. I am your host, Caroline Hobby. I know music, I know people, and I know the questions you want to ask. So let's get hyper. Heads up, these are adults having adult conversations, so there could be adult content. And this week is so exciting because I have the man, the myth, the legend on today's episode, Rod Essig. He is one of the powerhouse players at CAA, which is a huge booking agency, one of the biggest in the world. And booking agencies book acts at shows. So that is how all these artists show up at all these shows, because an agent books them and does so much more than just that. But he has worked with everyone from Tim McGraw, Sonny and Cher, Martina McBride, Julianne Hough, Taylor Swift. The list goes on and on. And he's hysterical and amazing. And you're about to get all the inside scoop on what really happens. So welcome Rod Essig, everybody. Okay. Hi, Rod Essig.
Well, hello. How you doing?
I've been told to lower my voice, so I'm trying to speak in a more...
You missing the floor?
Interview.
Just one.
No, this is lovely. We're sitting in your beautiful office. Rod Essig, by the way, he is the badass, like, team captain of CAA.
That's right.
What is your official title?
I am department head of the Nashville office.
Could you explain to me what CAA is?
CAA is the largest motion picture, television, music, and sports agency in the world.
And you are the division head of Nashville.
Of Nashville.
So that makes you quite a big deal.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I just have to work harder than everybody else. That's all.
That's a big title.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to know how you got started. But first, I want to ask you a few rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
What song best describes your work ethic?
Live Like You Are Dying.
Okay. Who's your celebrity free pass? Who is Sherry okay with? Because your wife's awesome. So this is all in respect to her because I love her. And who's her free pass?
My free pass would probably be Keira Knightley.
Oh, Sherry would approve?
No. I wouldn't ask her permission. I'll tell you a great story. There was one. This is way, way, way back when.
Yeah.
And anyway, I went to L.A. and I represented Jeff Foxworthy at that time, and we had there was no flights going in and out, so he had to go the night before for a 9 o'clock meeting next day. So anyway, I'm sitting in Brian Lord's office.
Who's Brian Lord?
And Brian Lord's one of the original partners of CAA.
Okay.
And he said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "I'm not doing anything tonight. I had to come out here because I got a meeting in the morning." He said, "So you're free tonight?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm free." So anyway,
which is very rare for you.
Yes, very much. So in the meantime, he said, just stay here for 10 minutes. So I stayed here for 10 minutes. I said, "What do you want?" He said, "I need you to go someplace tonight." So I went in the door, walks Demi Moore.
Nice.
And anyway, I was her date that night.
You were Demi Moore's?
I thought it was Demi. I don't know Demi Moore, but anyway, she was cute. That didn't matter.
She was totally bald.
Remember, it was for G.I. Jane. And I went with her to all the Hollywood stuff that night. She never left my arm. And I always have a rule. When I get back to the hotel room, no matter what time it is, I call my wife. We got back about 4:30, quarter to 5, L.A. time, which is about a quarter to 7, Nashville time.
So that's like the morning.
Right. And so Sherry said, this is really late. And I said, well, it's really early. But she said, all night long, you've been out with Demi Moore. And I said, Sherry, if anything would happen, if I got that lucky, I'd tell you about it. We go to counseling for the rest of our lives. So, I mean, come on. That's what it is.
Sherry, your wife is pretty awesome.
Yes, she is. She's totally awesome.
Is she, like, let you be you?
She just said, if I don't come home, it'll cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm a real Capricorn. I don't want to share anything. Okay?
All right. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. If your house is on fire and you can only grab three things before leaving, what would they be and why? And they can't be your family members. Or your pets.
I'd grab the pictures, and I'd grab, obviously a little safe in the house because that's got stuff, jewelry and stuff in it, and I'd get on my motorcycle and leave. You have to take your motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. You love Harleys.
I love Harleys.
And you're a big part of Sturgis. Is that what it is?
Well, I'm very involved in booking a lot of Sturgis, and I go there every year.
Is that how you got into Harleys?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, to be very honest, my first Harley was given to me by Tim McGraw. We had a very successful run of dates, and he knows he's a rider too. He knew I loved Harleys, mm-hmm. So he bought a Harley and threw the keys at me and said, "Okay, here's your Harley. Have a good time."
That was a very successful run.
Right.
If that's your thank you present.
Of course, it was the cheapest Harley that he had at the time, but it was a Sportster. But, you know, he could have bought me a Road King or something big, but he didn't, you know.
So are you and Tim besties?
Yeah, I'd say we are.
Who are your best celebrity friends?
Tim McGraw, Leanne Rimes, Julianne Hough.
Oh, she's having a big year.
Yes, we're having a big, big, big year. I just got a text from her from doing such a great job. I congratulated her on Sunday night.
Oh, because it was like the biggest musical mm-hmm. on TV since, I forgot, since what?
This was Grease, and what'd they do, Peter Pan? I think it was Peter Pan, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. She's the perfect Sandy.
Did you get her
that gig?
Our LA office did. Yeah, I knew all about it. She has a lot of stuff going, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, her career will guide her to some way, just take over Broadway, like yeah. Christian Chenoweth. I mean, she's that dancer, she's that singer, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah,
she's got all that going, but she's still working on a lot of motion picture stuff right now.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so Julianne Hough.
Mm-hmm.
Who else are your besties?
I say probably, then you got in there Martina McBride.
Yeah.
She was over here this morning. She's a real good friend. And then probably my bestie motion picture friend is Reese Witherspoon. She's been my date for probably 10.
You're friends with Elle Woods?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
What's she like in real life?
Like you are, just totally fun and
cute
and gorgeous. And
I'll keep
and,
going.
Yeah, she's just
or
fun.
Or twins. Are you calling me twins with Reese?
Yeah, you could be, you know.
But she's so awesome, and she has that production company, and she's doing all of those amazing movies that are highlighting women as leads.
And she's gonna a woman move empowerment. Here. She's going to move back to Nashville, which
really?
Is great. Yeah.
She started her store, her mm-hmm. clothing store.
And her sprinkles. Have you had Sprinkles Cupcakes? That's her.
She has a Sprinkles store?
Right next to it. Sprinkles Cupcakes.
Dang. And she's a mom. And, I love women like that. They do
and
it
her
all.
Husband is a very, agent. Very, very successful agent at CAA, Jim Toth.
Oh, love
He's
it.
Got these little people like Matthew McConaughey and things like that.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know Matthew?
Yeah. In fact, Tim McGraw is doing Matthew McConaughey's benefit this year, June 4th.
That's awesome.
In New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Okay. Have you ever been arrested?
For real, no.
Okay,
for fun,
fake?
Where I used to grow up, there was a number of us that got in trouble a lot of times. So we would get, they would arrest us basically the night of October 30 and hold us in jail for 31. So we would wreck stuff.
So you actually have spent a night in jail?
Oh, yes.
How was that?
Horrible.
Did you get hit on?
In jail? No.
Well, you're so cute.
Thank you. But no, I did not. No, I did not.
Okay. And last rapid fire. If you were going to be in the circus, what would you do?
That I would probably be an animal tamer.
Because that's basically what you do in real life.
Yes, it's true.
Okay. It's basically what your real job description is.
I'm really a fireman. I put a fire hat on every day and put out fires all day long.
Who gives you the biggest fires to put out?
You know something? It varies. It's certain times. Mm-hmm. Certain tours could be really hard. Other tours are very easy. You know, there's some. I'm doing the one right now with Cheap Trick, Joan Jett, and Hart.
Awesome.
And I'm the direct agent to Hart and Joan Jett. And as a rule, as an agent, you should never put two of your acts on a show together because when you go see them, they both want your time.
Oh, okay.
And so they're always playing you against each other. So this one's been, every day is one more. They're not big problems. They're just little things. And then, so you have to put that fire out a little bit. So, but the tours, the overall tour is selling incredible. So now a lot of the problems are gone because the ticket sales are so good.
So nobody cares.
Yeah.
So are you in the middle of a lot of catfights?
Yes.
Usually females? Is it artists? Is it agents? Is it who do you fight
no,
with the
I would,
most?
No, it would be everybody. Artists, agents. Okay. Because here, we do so much conflict of interest. So you, even if you have the project in CAA, everybody is fighting for their own client. and they're fighting really hard. So we compete to get that second or third slot in front of a Tim McGraw or Keith Urban or something like that. So we really compete with each other, calling the managers and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, as far as if you put the two artists together, mm-hmm. there's never a problem.
Right.
It's only a problem when they're not sitting in the same room.
Because then they go through you.
Yes.
The middleman always is the problem.
And then you assume it's a bigger problem than it really is.
Right.
You know, so I like to have people sit down face to face and talk to each other because that problem is gone. Then it's not who sit or we sit or what happened. So
smart, Rod. So tell me, walk me through a typical day in the life of Rod Essig, because I don't know if many people know what an agent is and how big of a role this plays in a career for an artist. Like, what is your typical day and week looking like?
Well, my normal day is about between 500 and 600 emails.
You read them all?
Yes, you have to.
Wow.
And then normally,
I've sent you like 4 emails in a day before just for fun. So I'm going to stop doing that.
and then normally, I mean, in today's world, normally I have 120 to 150 phone calls. So some of them are just, yeah, no, it's okay, that kind of stuff. But you get into a lot of stuff. We still sell. So an agent is to go out and obtain work for your client. That's your basic job.
Work being?
Gigs or, you know, being shows or opportunities on television or motion pictures or endorsements or sponsorships or all that kind of stuff.
So you oversee all of that?
You oversee all that. You're really the hub. And then you also are the hub of that manager, of the record company, of the publicist. Because you're the one. I always figure when I book a day on Tim McGraw, there's probably 1,000 people that go to work. From ticket takers to security to, you know, think of all the ushers and all that stuff, bus drivers and, mm-hmm. you know, hotel. I mean, you're going to go into hotels. So because of that one date, there's 1,000 people that work.
So you have to get it right.
So it's got to be totally right. And you have to take it very serious. And you can only go, when you route, you can only go 350 miles a night because they have to load in, load out, set up and all that stuff. And then you have to really watch who else is in the marketplace because you can't be Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw in the same city at the same time because there's only so many people that have money to buy tickets.
Have you ever messed up?
Yes.
What happens when that happens?
It affects the ticket sales. And you have a big problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, but that's, I mean, and you sit in a lot of meetings and plan this out. I mean, right now I'm meeting with Gil Cunningham, who's a big producer of festivals. He wants to talk about 2017.
Really? He's already done with 16.
16's all done.
It's booked.
On sale, everything.
Okay.
So he wants to know who we can do in 17. I said, Gil, everybody's open. I mean, I haven't thought about 17. We're just going into February.
So is it kind of like a puzzle piece, like putting together acts?
Totally.
And say you get an offer for one act, but they're kind of large and mm-hmm. they don't want to do it. Will you go to smaller act after that?
Oh, yeah. Or you have to make sure your basic instinct is to make sure that everything sells.
Okay.
So we're in the business. We compete hard with other agencies, but we work very closely with other agencies because the bottom line, we have to sell tickets. If we don't sell tickets, nothing happens.
That's a good distinction. So you're competing hard, but you also need them to be successful.
You want to put together the greatest package.
So how do you walk that line?
I don't know. I've done it for 40 years. It's just, that's
because like
do.
You kind of like hate them in a way, but you also like love them.
But you have to talk to them because you need, and they need you. So just it's a give and take on both sides. They want your hot act to be on their shows.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you cannot as an agent you cannot sell or be responsible for anybody's festival or anything. Everything you just don't have the right acts. And if you do them one year, they don't want to repeat them the next year. So you just tell them. I mean, we have dates that I just tell people I don't have anything to sell you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to sell you tickets. So, but the only time an artist really gets really mad at you is if they look out and see empty seats.
And then they're pissed.
Yeah. And a big artist, an extra $50,000-$60,000 means nothing if there's a big hole in the middle that doesn't have anybody sitting in it.
Have you gotten yelled at by an artist before?
Yes.
Anyone in particular?
No, just a number of them.
Oh, man.
You know, when you're responsible for artist income, and remember, today in today's world, it's probably 85% to 90% is what they do on the road, and that's what we do. you know, before these used to be 50% was record income and publishing and all that. Well, now, I mean, there was, I was telling somebody the other day, I went 2 years of Leanne Rimes' first album. 2 years, every week, she never sold under 100,000 units.
Really?
So to this day, Leanne Rimes has sold 46 million records, okay?
She has sold 46 worldwide million records?
Records. Now, wow. Taylor Swift will never, ever even do that.
Because just record sales are so different.
Record
now?
Sales, it's all streaming and all that. In those days, you had to buy the album to get the single.
It's kind of sad that that's gone.
Well, and that's where the record companies made a lot of their money. I mean, mm-hmm. And at that point, her records were like $17.95 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and now you don't have a record over $10.
No.
And so figure the profit. And so anyway, but for we went almost a little over 2 years that she sold at least 100,000 units a week. Consistently.
That is, I remember the Leanne Rimes phase. That was everything. I wanted to be a singer because of her and Blue.
A lot of people. Yeah. Taylor Swift is the same thing.
Yeah.
Because of Leanne, that's why I'm in the music business.
Okay, so how did you get in the music business? Like, how did you even know what an agent was to even dream this up?
The real, in way back when I was in college, the colleges had the biggest budgets to buy entertainment.
Okay.
So everybody had a student activities fund or whatever. So I used to buy talent at my college. I went to school in Lamar's, Iowa. So I used to buy talent and hit John Denver and Johnny Cash and all those things in those days.
How did you become the talent buyer at your college?
That was a big position that you had to work to get at. You had to serve on a committee when you're a junior. When you're a senior, you could become, and you had money at that point. Now remember, you couldn't buy films at that time. So the only entertainment they got was touring artists. So you had money. American University probably had $300,000 or $400,000 to spend on artists.
So you saw this and you thought that would be a fun job.
So then I went, in that day, you don't even remember because you weren't born, but there was a draft and I got drafted and went to Vietnam.
You went to Vietnam?
Hmm?
So then I came.
No, we don't talk about that. Okay. So then I came back and I called this guy, Gordy Singer, that I used to buy all my talent from. And he said, "Do you think you want to be an agent?" He gave me a phone. And now understand, in that day, it was a dial phone. Okay. And so within 6 months, I signed this guy named Jim Croce.
Okay.
And because, again, we are the largest college agency in America. So then I went from a live there to Olivia Newton-John, Mac Davis, Helen Reddy, The Fifth Dimension. I just kept signing things. So within the five-year period, I ended up owning half the agency that I went to work for. And then I was with that agency for 20 years, and then I moved everybody to California. And we had to Red Hot Chili Peppers, Motorhead, all these big metal bands. And then CA came to me and said, "Would you ever come to work over here?" And at that point, they didn't have anybody that did fairs, festivals, privates. They had 12 promoters, and that's all they sold to. And so I literally went over there, and the second day I was there, my very best friend in life was a guy named Bobby Brooks. Okay. And Bobby got me to come to CAA, and the next day he died in the helicopter with Stevie Ray Vaughan.
No.
In Wisconsin, yeah. So I worked in L.A. for a year, and then Rob says, "Well, John Huey and Ron Baird, we're going to open up Nashville."
And those are the founders in L.A.?
Right. They were the founders here.
Okay.
John and Ron. So then I came here, and the three of us now, we started with three agents and five acts.
Who were your first five acts?
Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, Billy Dean, Clint Black, and I'm trying to think one more, Randy Travis.
Nice.
So then I got into town, and I kept being able to sign people that were in-house. When I say in-house, because CA had motion pictures and television, so I signed Reba McEntire, and I signed Trisha Yearwood, and all these people of that reason. They wanted to be in television. They didn't want to just be a touring act. Barbara Mandrell is another one. So anyway, that's kind of how it all came, and now we've got 122 people here, and we've got probably 110 acts. Of which, you know, so it's just grown out of here into a very large company now.
So did you go to this college because you wanted to get involved in this program, or was that just an accident?
I had a music education degree, and in those days, my mother wanted me to be a teacher.
So you don't have music in your family? Like, you're the first?
No, I'm the first, yeah.
And it was just sort of a coincidence?
Yeah, but in the week...
Perfect storm.
From when I literally ended up... when my number was 31 in the draft, so nobody would hire anybody. And that year, they were taking up to 120 people. So you'd have to go and apply for a job, and they'd say, what's your draft number? Say 31. Well, then they wouldn't hire you because you're going to get drafted. So I went and sang that summer with Sonny and Cher.
You sang with Sonny and Cher?
Yeah.
No one knows because you're such an amazing agent, and you are such a powerhouse. You know. But I have heard you sing. You sang a duet with your daughter, Frank Sinatra duet. You were a singer. Mm-hmm. So what was it like being on the road with Sonny and Cher?
Well, they were, at that time, I mean, again, it's very different because all they did was play the Playboy Club circuit.
So you hated it.
Oh, I loved it. It was the best time of my life.
So you played for Playmates?
Yes.
That's who you performed for?
I performed for Playmates.
Did they wear clothes?
They wore the bunny outfits.
Where is the, what is the Playboy circuit?
In the early part of the evening. After that, you never know. But
so did you do a lot of time at the Playboy Mansion?
I did mainly Racine, Wisconsin, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, and then we played the Playboy Mansion. But Sonny and Cher were just starting at that time.
What does the Playboy circuit mean? What is that? I've never heard of that.
There used to be a lot of Playboy clubs on the top of hotels. So they were all over America. New York, Chicago, Atlanta, and they were always on the top floor of a hotel.
Torture, Rod.
I know. It was just horrible.
This is just horrible for you. As a young guy starting out singing with Sonny and Cher, the Playboy circuit. I mean, this is the start of your...
And then I got drafted. So my hair was down to here. I'm telling you, showed up at Fort Leonard Wood, walked in. It took 30 seconds to cut your hair off. Done.
Was that sad?
It was very sad.
Because you have great hair.
It was very sad. So that, and then, you know, and then having people tell you what to do. I'm not that guy.
No, you're the one that tells people what to do.
So, you know, I remember one time the sergeant said, we were just standing on, he said, okay, who has a college education? And I raised my hand. The dumbest thing you've ever done in your life. Don't ever do that in the Army. Raise your hand.
Why?
Because we cleaned floors for the next 3 days because we had a college education.
You were punished for it?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
You think you're smarter than everybody else? Da-da-da.
Oh, gosh.
I'll show you little college kids what's going on. Oh, it was horrible, horrible, horrible.
How long did you serve? How long were you overseas?
This is in 1972 and 73. So normally you were in for 24 months. I got out in 14 months because the war was getting over in 73, 74. So everybody's coming home. So I was only over there for 2 months.
That's good.
Yeah.
So why did you not pick up singing when you got back? Why did you,
you know,
go the other side?
Because I don't want to starve to sing. When I was a student teacher, I made a decision on
how much teach?
Music. What? Music.
Okay.
Now there was this great senior, that good looking senior that I went, okay.
So you're totally motivated by women.
Yes. most of my clients are women. So in the meantime, I think women are gorgeous, but in the meantime, at that point, I student taught in Rock Rapids, Iowa. So just you can picture that in your mind, you know. And so in the meantime, I had long hair. You couldn't have a drink in town.
Oh, no.
So I just said, from this point on, no one will ever tell me how much money I can make, what I have to look like, and who I can date, ever.
And you stuck by that.
And I stuck by that.
And here you are.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first sold-out show that you ever booked?
John Denver.
Oh, John Denver.
John Denver, yep.
How was that?
Sold out Ames, Iowa, which was about 12,000 seats. It was huge.
Did that make you feel?
Oh, incredible. You know, but again, everything in those days was so different. John Denver on that date got paid $20,000. The promoter made all the money. There was no one knew anything about back ends, the percentages, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, I still represent Styx. And Styx, to this day, now they make 75 to 100 grand a night. They played the Forum and sold out 6 forums. They get paid $25,000 per night.
Really?
In their heyday. But now remember, tickets were $5, $7.50, and $12.50. So the grosses were not big. So it's a very different world that we're into.
When did
now.
That change? When did the ticket sales and how it's distributed change?
Probably on the onset of the computers.
Okay, why was that?
Because then your accountants would go on the road, or you could send it in, and you know, and your managers just got a lot smarter.
Yeah,
I mean, you had managers that at that point now are just dealing with, we got to make as much money as we can on the road. We got to gross our acts out as much money as we can. That kind of stuff.
That's crazy. So when was the first time you had the feeling of like, this is what I love, like I'm doing my passion?
I will tell you, the first time I had that was Tim McGraw.
Mm-hmm. When he shot up.
Leanne Rimes, through the roof. There was no stopping these people.
What
at
does
all.
It feel like when you're on that rocket ship ride with
it's
them?
It's just, you. Nothing goes wrong. It's just, you can't, nothing goes wrong. The only thing is you have to really watch that your artist doesn't believe in all the hype. You have to
and
just keep
tricky.
Them as much as real as you can.
How do you do that?
Because they'll stub their toe. You'll have a show that just doesn't do it, and they go like, What happened? Well, you didn't do an interview, and you didn't do this, and you didn't do this, and you didn't wait long enough to play the market after somebody else had played the market.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I've got one right now. Cam's going through the roof. I mean, she's
blowing up.
She's blowing up totally. You know, and
burning
she
house.
And she called. That's a call in.
What
she called
mean?
And said, "Would you have a meeting with me?"
Oh, she came to
she
you.
She came to me.
And she's a woman, which is hard right now for women, especially mm-hmm. in country music. So was that a risky sign in the beginning?
No.
Because you believed in her?
First of all, back again, this is 10, 12 years ago, when at that point I had Leanne Rimes, Reba McEntire, Faith Hill, Trisha Yearwood, Martina McBride, Dolly Parton. They were all happening.
And you knew women could work.
Totally. The very few have done what Reba has done or Dolly has done. You go really fast because most guys want to have a female as an opening act just because they don't want anybody to compare them with them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
It's a very big thing. Yeah.
Huh.
We got to have something for the guys to come to the show because the girls all come to see the guys.
Right.
So it's something that for their husbands at least to entice them to come to the show. So okay. that's but you can build that to a certain point of about 10 or 12,000 seats to get from 12 to 18,000 like the Tims and the Lukes and everything. That takes a lot of, you have to package properly.
So who's really, on tour is a big deal.
Yes. Yes. Big deal.
Do you want someone who's going to sell a lot of tickets to go on tour with someone, or is it more like a cool factor, or what do you look for as an opening act?
I'm totally into radio hits.
That's
radio
it.
Hits. Yeah.
Radio hits is everything.
I mean, I'm not a Americana kind of guy that, you know, it's really hip to book this club with this act.
You want a hit.
Yeah. I like representing big stars and doing a lot within their framework of an artist. I like making, and it's fun growing them into a brand as opposed to just an artist.
Yeah.
So that they have all these different things around them.
What do you like to, how do you like to maneuver that? Like when you get the music cemented, where do you like to go next with the brand? Is it dependent upon the client?
It depends. Like with Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. Taylor Swift came in and she knew exactly who she was.
Who was she?
She was, first of all, she was a writer. She was a singer. She was the first really, really, really digital person that would go on and tell you where she's going, who she's seeing, what she's doing, every part of the day. So she was on her
computer. She's very honest
computer.
With her life. Like, mm-hmm. Her life
yeah.
was exposed.
Exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, like she said, she wrote really good songs. But the very first tour I put her on was George Strait because she was 16 years old. And if in country music, when you're 16 years old, you don't know anything. You're just
right.
dumb and you're cute and that's it.
Right.
So we had to make her a country star. So by being on George Strait and her wearing cowboy boots, says she's country.
That was very strategic.
Yeah.
So the cowboy boots were strategic.
Yes. And she wore those for probably the first 3 years of her.
It was her thing, little dresses and cowboy boots.
Exactly right. And the same when she had the song Tim McGraw, I said to her and Tim, because I luckily had both of them, I said, you guys can never meet until we do this on national television.
Oh,
and they
that's
didn't.
Smart.
Well, they did. And they were at times.
Was it at an award show they met?
Yeah, at the ACMs. She sang and walked down to Tim and Faith.
I remember
and sang
that.
Tim McGraw.
That was a big moment.
Yeah,
so you set that up.
Yes.
That's
because
amazing.
Because it's real. Why should they lie?
And it's a great story.
And but I also remember when I told Tim McGraw that she was doing a song about him, he was going like, oh, why would she do something about me? Why don't she sing about George Jones? You know, I'm not an icon. Well, to her, you are.
Yeah, because it's the age difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of crazy.
Right. So that was a really fun moment.
Do you have a lot of creativity like that where you can dream up wild ideas and make them happen?
Yeah. But maybe only 10% of what I ever do.
What's some of the... Because
there's some really crazy ones, you know.
What's something you've dreamed up that's wild, that's happened, that's been an amazing event?
I have to think back. It's been so long on how many people I've done. I can't come up with one right now.
Susan, who's a manager at Red Light, and we were actually talking about you because you're amazing. Do you... speak things into existence because you always are super positive and you like, it's just happening. It's always happening with you. Like it's never not going to happen, but then it actually does happen. And I feel like that is a talent that not all people can actually materialize.
I do a lot of that just because I've done this for so long. So I have so many friends in the business. I mean, you know, a lot of them are dying off now, but that's a bummer. But, you know, again, in my world, you talk to everybody. They're your friends.
Yeah.
In your world, you text and email. I tell all the time the emails or my assistants, call them, get a relationship.
Yeah.
Find out about them because when they need something, they're going to call you. When you need something, you can call them and just get it done.
So that personal relationship, mm-hmm. Do you think that's gone a long way?
It's done a long time. I mean, I can actually say that, you know, on certain things, Jack Sussman will do this mm-hmm. at CBS because he's been a friend of mine for so many years. You can't give him something that's really a dud.
Right.
You have to give him something that's on fire.
And you know him and you know what he
mm-hmm.
gravitates towards. Right. That's interesting with speaking on the phone because it is such a texting, digital.
I'm on the phone 12 to 14 hours a day.
But you actually want the human contact.
I totally want the human contact.
It makes a difference. It's harder to say no when you're talking on the phone.
You've experienced half of it of getting shit done.
Human relationship goes so much farther, I feel like. People want to help you when they know you, and you want to help someone when you know them.
There's so many people that are touchy-feely. You just got to get to know them.
Hi.
No, but I mean, you have to get to know them. And once they get to know you, they'll kill for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always really work on that. I always try and put people together, whether it's artists, managers, agents, whatever. I'm always trying to network people. I love networking people. And I'm very good at networking.
So how do you deal with radio? Because radio is such a separate beast than booking. Because you have all these great acts. There's a lot of great female acts in particular, too. Females are having a hard time in country music right now. A lot having to do with radio and not playing them.
But
how do
we're
you manage
changing
that?
It
how are you changing that?
Because we're getting Kelsey Ballerini. We've got Cam happening. We've got Brooke Eden starting to happen. We've got a lot of stuff that's happening, you know. And a lot of that is my friends, Carrie Wolf in Milwaukee. There's a bunch of playmakers.
So you're friends with radio.
Yeah. Because, well, they all do radio shows, and they need artists.
Yeah.
So they buy a lot of stuff from us directly as opposed to a promoter putting them in there. And then they're also, these guys on the air want to know that they have Taylor Swift in it. I can call up, and I got Martina McBride calling in. And I got this calling in. So in some regards, as an agent, I'm much, much more of a manager agent.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's bad. But I'm really involved with my clients. And the managers, their managers all know that. I'm really involved.
Right. I think that's important.
I do, too. But I have other friends of mine that are great agents. And until their artist asks for something, they would never do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be proactive. I like to keep bringing them stuff and keep bringing them because I think they work harder then.
Yeah, because they know how hard you're working.
Right. And also, it's an opportunity that they haven't thought about, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, or else Martina will talk about, she loves cooking.
So I said, she made a cookbook. Oh.
So we went and we made a cookbook.
Was that your idea?
Yeah. So we went to, I called. She said it was her, I mean, it's her idea.
Right.
I was able to make it happen.
Help manifest
with
it.
With Simon Green in New York City.
Yeah. So you're like, done. You want a cookbook? We're going to make a cookbook.
Well, so you had to go sell it.
Right.
You can't, like I said, you can't sell duds. You have to have something behind it. But once Martina went and met the publishers, they were in.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think they came down here and went to her house for dinner, and they were totally in.
Because she cooked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Why do you think women haven't been a big presence lately? Why they're coming back, but why do they have a lull?
Well, we just got into this whole bro country for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned out to be just male dominant. And, you know, and again, there was a cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
You just had some of the people that were just getting older, and you didn't have the blowaway people that were younger.
Yeah.
And I think right now, some of the younger kids are just incredible artists. I think they're really, really good. And unless you're really great, you're not going to make it.
That's true.
And I think Cam, Kelsey, I mean, all these people are not overnight success.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They just happen to get the breaks right now.
Who are you most excited about, this new batch of artists? Who are you most on fire for?
I'm really, really on fire for Brooke Eden.
She's awesome.
I think she's cute. She rides Harleys with me.
But she does?
She does. She's my Harley bitch. But in the meantime, I think she's also really good.
Her voice is ridiculous.
When you put again, if you can't deliver, yep. I can sell all day long. It won't happen.
Right.
And she's really good. So all of a sudden, all the artists are loving who she is. And you have to build the artist mm-hmm. network as much as you do the fan network.
Yeah.
Because then they all talk about
you're
you.
You're so right.
Yeah.
Because it's a community.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Nashville in general is a community.
It's a total community.
Yeah.
And the writers are all, and there's people that are great writers and they're just not ready to be an artist yet. And
that's
there's people
true.
That are great writers that never become an artist. And they shouldn't be. They don't have the artist look. They don't have the work ethic. Being an artist is really hard.
What kind of work ethic do you have to have?
You got to just kill. It's 24/7.
You have to be obsessed.
You get to bed at midnight. You're up at 4 in the morning, so you look great at 6 a.m. for being on the stupid radio. You have to look great.
Because
if that guy in there sits there and goes, yeah, she didn't look that good this morning.
They won't play. It's that simple, huh?
It's that simple. It's very different.
You have to be on.
Or if you're not funny enough.
What if you're not funny just naturally? You better figure out how to be funny.
Then you should be a writer.
If you don't look good and you're not funny, you need to write.
Just write great hit songs, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
There's just so much to do in that world that we get people to come in here. And I have to say this, normally, if they're from The Voice or from some of those TV shows, they've learned how to sing 4 songs.
Yeah.
I'll take anybody that's been playing in front of a crowd in a bar
mm-hmm.
and develop them any day before I'll just take someone that doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah. That's so true.
You know, and I go cringe every time they come in. I go like,
oh, you're like, oh gosh.
Okay, here we go. You know.
So you have seen a lot of stuff. You've done a lot of stuff. Some you might not be able to talk about. What are some of the wild, tell me a wild story that like people could not believe could really happen.
Well, you don't even know who this guy is.
Okay.
Jerry Jeff Walker.
No, I know who that is.
Okay, he wrote Mr. Bojangles.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry had a majorly drinking problem in his early years, and I was his agent. And I remember going to a show, and anyway, the band's on stage, playing, and we couldn't find Jerry. He was so drunk, he was in the audience waiting for himself to come on.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. So we put him on stage and took towels and wrapped around so he wouldn't keep hitting his head against it.
Could he sing?
Yeah. Well, Jerry Jeff never was a great singer. He was just... That's why I could write Mr. Bojangles too, you know.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, you know, just fun stuff like that. I also remember with Andre Agassi. I used to do all the entertainment Andre Agassi. Yeah, and Steffi. They're still friends. So anyway, one year I put Tim McGraw on the evening, and it used to be David Foster had a big orchestra and everything.
Yeah.
So that night there was. I think it was Elton John. It was Elton John. And Elton sang his song, and he said, would Tim ever sing with me, Tiny Dancer?
Oh, my gosh.
I remember Tim said, I want to do it. And he did it. But he was a wreck, a total wreck, just nervous. He went out and
Elton,
nailed it.
Tim did.
He nailed it, and they put it out as a single. For real. It was one of Tim's singles.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But those kind of things are just the things. That's what fires me up.
Because, like, who could even dream that up?
Yeah, you can't. Some things you can, they just happen. Or other things you can just try and make them happen, but they still never do. But when they do, they're magic.
It is. It's like
magic.
It's magic. It's like magic happens.
And you'll never see that again.
Mm-mm. It's like you cannot recreate it.
I remember we did this thing called All for the Hall. We do All for the Hall L.A., All for the Hall New York. So this one year, it's always Emmylou Harris, Vince Gill.
Awesome.
It's a singer-songwriter thing. We had Taylor Swift, Lionel Richie, and Kris Kristofferson.
Dang.
Now, Taylor was on fire, sang her Tim McGraw song and everything. Well, Lionel sings one of his, career anthems. And I remember Kris Kristofferson sitting over there and going, I wrote this song, and... this little girl, Janis Joplin, sang it. But it was, I used to call my manager. He never talked to me. So I kept talking all the time to his assistant, his secretary. And her name was Bobby McGee. And he started singing Me and Bobby McGee. That's
really?
How he wrote the song.
Because he was talking to the secretary.
Yeah, his manager wouldn't talk to him. So Bobby McGee was his manager's secretary. And I'm telling you.
Does Bobby McGee know? She has to know.
She knows. But to this day... I mean, I'm telling you, if you walked up to Lionel or Taylor and say, what was an event in your life? They'll say, Chris Christopherson singing Bobby McGee. Because, you know, he's old and he's got sort of onset of Alzheimer's and, you know, and everything. But it's just kind of, it was such an emotional moment that night for these major stars.
Dang. You know? It's they did, because you don't know all the backstories.
No, you don't know. And it was just, you know, we just did the one last year, and that had Carrie Underwood, Brad Paisley, Emmylou Harris, Vince, and Paul Simon. And when Paul Simon started singing, everybody just dropped their guitars and went, oh, my God, how do we even do this? You know?
Don't. You just you know, revel.
And just, I mean, those kind of things to me are, that's why I do this every day. Well, I'll take shit all day long to get those moments. Because people don't get those moments.
I agree with you. Like, you don't want an ordinary life. You've never want. How did you know you didn't want an ordinary life? Like, you just aren't made for it. You're an extraordinary soul.
I understand. I grew up in a little town. I had 11 kids in my graduating class.
11 kids?
And all I wanted to do is get out of that town.
Get out.
Out. I wanted to get out. And a big thing to me was having some place I lived in my life that would have something open all night long. Could be a Perkins, a Waffle House. I didn't care. It had to have something
on the action.
So then I just, like I said, I just kept signing and signing and signing people, you know, and it's kept going through all these years. It's been a very good life.
It has been. It's been a wild ride.
But with that same thing, that's why I travel over the holidays.
Yeah.
And go to all these crazy places. I've never been these places.
So you want to, like, is your goal, like, Rod Essig, mission statement for life? Do it all, be it all, see it all, big.
Yes.
You just
and have fun at it.
But you want to experience everything.
Yes, I want it all.
So what are the coolest things you've experienced?
Last year in November, I've always wanted to land in an F-18 on an aircraft carrier.
Okay.
And so I do a lot of work with the USO.
Because you've gone to Afghanistan. You convinced me that Iraq was going to be safe going over there, that it was not scary at all, and then we were getting mortared.
But now we're sitting here. It's great. And it was a great experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you told me.
It was a great experience.
I'm so grateful I did it. It was the mm-hmm. most amazing experience. Meanwhile, though, you're telling me you had just gotten back from Afghanistan,
right,
where a bomb dropped right by mm-hmm. y'all's
it
tank
did.
That you were in.
It did.
And you're like, but don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
It's fine. You're fine, too, aren't you? You didn't hurt
totally
you.
Totally fine. You're fearless, though.
Yeah. So anyway, so I got to land on an aircraft carrier in November.
Yeah.
And it would stay there all day long, shot guns off the aircraft carrier, and the next day take off, catapult off in an F-18 and go back. And those are, I had that wish for probably 12 years.
And you did it. How was it?
It finally was beyond incredible.
It was beyond.
Yeah. And some people say, why'd you do it? I've always wanted it. I don't want to skydive. It's not my thing.
Okay.
So I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
You know, but I do want to go to Africa and have an African safari, which is...
Have you done that yet?
No, that'll be next year.
So you just got back from India.
Yeah.
And how was that?
Chaos. I loved it. I'm glad I did it. I won't go back and do it again.
And the Taj Mahal?
Incredible.
Just crowded?
Crowded. I mean, it's like I said, it's chaos at its best. And I just... I'm glad I did it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not my thing. I'd much rather go to Spain or go to Italy or, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to. We went to, one year we went to Tahiti. That was great. And then we went to Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam.
Dying to go to Thailand.
And Thailand was just amazing.
Is it amazing?
It's amazing. And Cambodia, Angkor Wat, was a highlight too. But we've done that with our kids, and hopefully they have great memories, you know.
Where are your top places you've traveled?
Thailand.
Yep.
Spain.
Oh, I love Spain. I lived in Spain.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Spain. Spain's amazing. I'm going to go back to Spain.
Where in Spain would you want to go?
I'll go back to Barcelona.
Awesome.
I loved it with all the Gaudi stuff and everything. I loved it. The people were great.
Yeah.
You know, I liked Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't like France.
You didn't like France?
No.
Why not?
I thought the people were snooty. So
really?
I'm not. Wasn't the people in Italy were so nice, but I just
France.
Wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't into it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I love the Louvre and all that kind of stuff. And Monte Carlo was incredible. But it's just, I just think the people were a little obnoxious. You have to get rid of that one. You can't say that. I have French people. Of course, I don't have any French acts. So
okay, that's great. Celine Dion, you should get her.
I'd love to have Celine Dion.
Oh, I love Celine Dion.
I love Celine Dion.
Celine Dion and Michael Bolton.
She's a great singer.
The best in the world.
See, I love singers.
You do. You appreciate it.
Love singers.
Because you are, you know what they call that? Spot it, got it. You are a great singer, Rod Essig. So you notice that in other people.
It's a big deal to walk into a showcase and they get two songs. If they're off pitch for two songs, I'm out the door. I don't care about how good they look or what they. If you can't sing on pitch and you're a singer, don't go into the business. I don't care. Auto-tune's not going to save your ass. You know?
I know.
So, yeah.
Why do you think so many people have addictions in this industry?
I think it's just very difficult. It's 24/7. Mm-hmm. So take yourself. I mean, you do this a normal day. That you go. It's kind of crazy. You spend 20 hours waiting to perform 30 minutes.
That's so interesting.
And then you got to keep up and happy for the other 3.5 hours until everybody leaves. And then you're so wired that you have to somehow try and slow down to get up at 4 a.m. to take a shower and be white. So then you go down and you go back up again. And then you get done with that in the morning. It's 9:00 a.m. Well, do I really want to go to sleep again? I mean, it's just a really, really rough life.
You have to be on all the time.
You've got to be on.
You can never have an encounter with someone and they have a bad experience with you.
And let me tell you, in your world today, your world, our world, I'm still here.
You're still definitely here.
But, you know, the cameras are on everywhere.
Like right here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're any place. It used to be somebody would screw up. It would take 3 days for anybody to find out about it, you know.
Yeah.
Even during a war, it took 24 hours to 48 hours for that stuff to come back here.
Everything's documented now.
Now, anything in the world going on, and it's there. Even in your own bathroom, if you have somebody put a camera there. It's somewhat not fair that there's no place for you to get
there's no place
out.
To go.
Right.
Okay, so who do you have any problem, Max?
No.
All of them are perfect.
Yeah. For this interview, yes.
Do you have any favorites that you just love to be around?
Yeah. I like to be around Tim McGraw.
He's a great guy.
And
he got sober.
He's very intense.
He runs 4 miles before he does a show, every show. Mm-hmm. He's in great shape.
He's just, you know what it is? He's a guy that, he's your partner, but he never leaves. Mm-hmm. He may get mad at you, but he's questioning what you're doing or he's done something or whatever. But that's what I love about him because I always say, if you go into an alleyway for a fight, Tim will be right next to you.
He's there.
He will not stay and watch you have the fight and see how you come out.
Really?
Yeah.
So
and
he's
there's
loyal.
And there's a bunch of people like that. You know what I mean? I've had, you know, a fun acts to be around. I love being around John and Martina. They're fun.
Yeah. McBride.
Yeah, they're fun. Leanne is great, but she's like my daughter. So it's like she's been with me for so many years. It's like, you know, and that's great. And yet when she opens her mouth, she's a incredible singer.
She's the best.
She just blows your socks off.
Are Tim and Faith as perfect as they seem?
Yeah, I think they really are. I think that they really are. I think Faith is just, I'd love to walk into the house and she's got all these, she used to have all the, you know, all this yellow pages full of all their itineraries and what they're going to do, what the girls do this day and what they're doing. I mean, I think she's just incredible that way. She's a great decorator. She's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
But they're both really nice people. They're really nice people. Mm-hmm. They're not unhappy.
Yeah.
You know, they're good people. So,
speaking of great wives, you have a great wife. How did y'all meet? Because she's a saint to be married. You're an angel, but you're a wild man.
Well,
you got
married,
so much going on.
We've been
on
married
all the time.
37 years. So
what's
it's kind
the secret?
Of crazy. Well, way back when, again, I was a singer.
Uh huh. So you fell in love with your voice? Did you swoon her?
I met her. My partner's son was getting married to her cousin, and I was the wedding singer.
No way.
Yeah. And I thought she had a great ass, so that's what I went after.
So she loved you before any of this happened?
Yes.
Before Playmate tour?
Oh, no. That's...
Okay, you had no, some
single days. I was in my late 20s, early 30s, so there was... I had a lot of Playmate time.
I think that's good for all people to have some Playmate time.
Yeah, so I had some time and everything like that. In fact, for the first couple of years... There was a number of people that would come up and say hi to us, and she didn't appreciate that.
I mean, the past is the past.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you have two amazing kids.
Yes.
They're both in this industry.
They're both in the industry.
In different facets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your daughter, Lana, is super talented.
She's a great singer, and she's being an actress and doing
gorgeous.
Her thing. Yes, and doing her thing. And my son is, so beyond what I can even understand.
And he's like a genius.
Yes, in the gaming world of, you know, of game apps, and has his own company, and it's kind of crazy, and hopefully he'll sell it in a year or so now, and we'll be fine.
Okay, so anything else I missed that you need to tell me that would be awesome for listeners to hear?
Do we get to talk about some of our times in Vegas and stuff?
Oh, Vegas. What happens in Vegas, Rod? That's a saying for a reason. I do love Vegas.
Yes, you do. We had some fun. We had some fun there.
I know. Mm-hmm. We've been to Vegas many times together
now.
Yes,
we have. So it's been good. It's been fun. But I love the stuff. I love the direction you're going in now. It's great.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you support my hosting career?
I totally do.
Will you get all of your artists to tweet about this podcast?
Yes, I will.
You will?
And also, I'll go book a nice big fat date for your husband so we pay for this.
A Thousand Horses? Yes, that's one of your other favorite bands, isn't it?
I love I think they're great. Michael's great, but
isn't
I've known him
sexy?
A lot of years, too.
Y'all both have that hair. Y'all both have the sexy hair. It's that flowing locks. So it gets all the ladies.
But his is still black. Mine is way beyond black.
No, his is. Y'all have the same color.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's good.
I know, Rod. You're already married. So, I mean, I had to marry Michael.
I know. That's true. That's okay.
I know.
But I also remember when you left him.
I know. We had a road.
She'll
didn't
delete
we?
All this in here. So
oh, no. We can talk about it all. Yeah, Michael. I like to call it our halftime show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All great acts have a halftime show, Rod.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, to wrap up my podcast, I'm wanting everyone to have a little segment called Leave Your Light. Give me some inspiration that either has affected you or that you can affect on other people.
I think the one thing, if I could tell all the young people, if you have a passion, just stay with it. Tenacity is everything, because it may not be the right time right now, but it'll come around. Everything goes in circles. And so if you really have that passion, just stay true to it and don't change it, because it'll all happen.
It will.
Mm-hmm.
You promise?
Well, I mean, so many people change. If they just stayed this way and people got to know who they were for that, it happens. That's just what
to.
It is. Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's not going to be always easy every day. Nothing's ever easy. But, you know, like I always tell people, I'm one of the lucky people. I got to do my life what I want to do. I've always wanted to be an agent. I got to be an agent my whole life. So I'm still happy. I still get excited about it every day. I mean, I have my ups and downs too, believe me. But most of them, I never dislike anybody.
You don't.
I get frustrated with what they do, but I don't dislike anybody. So frustration is the biggest thing. And that's just because somebody did some dumb thing or somebody had announced something before they didn't tell you the truth. And
so you have grace for people.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, I never say never with anybody. I don't have anybody that I've ever left that's just, no, I'm not going to see him again, talk to him again. Never.
That's quite an accomplishment.
I don't, why?
Right?
It's negative. It takes too much energy to be negative.
It takes too much energy to hate somebody.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, Rod. Rod Essig, everyone. Thank you for joining me. This is amazing. Oh, shoot. None of it recorded. I'm just kidding. Okay, bye, Rod.
Caroline. She's the queen of talking. Hey, what's on your mind? She's on the inside. She got the scoop on the ones to watch, on the ones that's hot. No one can do it quite like Caroline.
I hope you guys loved hearing all of the inside skinny from Rod Essig. That man knows everybody and knows everything about the entertainment industry. And it was so awesome to get to hear it from his own mouth. I hope that you loved it. And I hope that you feel more enlightened about what goes on behind the scenes. Next week, I have the Warren Brothers. And y'all, brace yourselves. I mean it. Like, get ready. Because these guys are wild. They are wild maniacs in the best way possible. They're two brothers. They had a big artist career. And then they morphed into just becoming hit songwriters. They wrote so many songs for Tim McGraw. If you're reading this, they wrote that song. They've written a ton of stuff for Martina McBride. They're actually also best friends with Tim McGraw and used to tour with him, and they tell some stories, and they are funny. And they had a show on CMT called Barely Famous. They're absolutely insane and so much fun, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear them next week. So do not forget to tune in and subscribe on iTunes to Hyper Caroline Hobby and leave comments. We'll see you next week. Bye.